Joe Phillips.
Jim with a video and I'm, wow.
Hot darn.
Nice. My goodness.
Okay, BCAT.
All right, it looks like we've got BCAT on, Mike, so I think we are ready whenever you are.
Sounds great. Call the meeting to order. This is the regular meeting of Tuesday, August 18th, 2020, 5:30 p.m. First item of business is A, introductions, and we'll start once again in South Kitsap with Commissioner Allen.
Kimberly Allen, Commissioner from South Kitsap.
Okay, Ed?
Commissioner Galloway, South Kitsap.
Great, Jim?
And Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Okay, moving to Central, Commissioner Beam. You're on mute, please.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Great. And Commissioner Shattuck notified us he had an emergency appointment at 5:30 this evening and could not join us. So we'll move to North Kitsap. Commissioner Mall.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
And Commissioner Murphy.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Great. And we have not heard from Commissioner Phillips. Usually he's good at notifying us and he's usually present. I'm hoping he didn't get locked out of his email account. And that's probably a good reminder because I've had that happen myself if you don't keep track of your days when it comes up. And I know Amanda does a great job working with us when we do get locked out, but it is security and we have to have it. But hopefully if anybody hears from Commissioner Phillips during the course of the meeting, let us know.
Okay. He did send a response saying that he would be attending tonight, so I can, that was a little bit earlier today, so I'm expecting him to show up here any minute.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Next item of business is B, virtual meeting protocol, and if you go to page 2 of our agenda, almost all the information you need is there, including how to participate in the meeting if you're a member of the public and you want to provide a public comment to the Planning Commission. Item C, adoption of agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion second. Commissioner Beam?
I would like to add an additional item on the agenda for to discuss the stormwater issues that we passed last time.
Okay, right now we have a motion and second to approve as presented. There's two ways to do this. Either you can make a motion now to amend the underlying motion, or the maker and the second of the motion could consent and agree to include that as an agenda item. So we'll go to how do you want to proceed? Well, let's make it easy. So the maker and the second of the motion to approve as presented, are you willing to include Commissioner Beam's agenda item? Yes or no?
Without knowing what the topic is and for staff.
Okay, fair enough. You know, so then
not having adequate time to prepare.
Yeah, perfect. So the alternative is Commissioner Beam, the motion currently being considered is to approve it as presented without your item. So if you want to include that, you would now need to make an amendment or a motion to amend the underlying motion to approve the agenda.
Mr. Chair, if I may interrupt for a minute, sure. You have one commissioner who is showing up as an attendee, not as a panelist.
Oh, thank you, which should be
Mr. Phillips there.
That's, yeah. Great.
I make a motion to amend the agenda to include a discussion on stormwater design.
So we have a motion to amend the motion to approve the agenda as presented to include stormwater design manual. Is there a second to the amendment? Okay, hearing none, the amendment fails. So now back to the original motion. Is there any further discussion on approving the motion to approve the agenda as presented? Okay, all those in favor of the motion to approve the agenda as presented, please signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
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 And all those opposed? Okay, motion carries. Commissioner Phillips, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Just can't see you. Well, okay. I can see you. You can't see me.
Right. Okay.
Trying to figure this out.
Sounds great. So we'll include you as an affirmative vote on the last vote because I saw your screen light up when we voted. Okay. Item D, adoption of minutes of July 21st, 2020. Are there any additions or corrections?
There was a slight misspelling on page 5, line 1. I'm sure they meant published, but.
Okay, so we'll note that correction. Any others? Okay. And I've got a few which I'll present quickly, and then I will email these to you after the meeting, Amanda. Just minor stuff. Yeah, so on page 4, line 24, it says Ms. Sylvan notes on option. It should have been an option, just a typo. I'll send that. Joe cut the one on page 5, published. It just says a J. Easy correction. And then on page 5, line 32, I want to delete where it says maybe lots of 1 acre or less. I'm fairly certain I said 1 acre or more, but we can just strike the whole thing because obviously it's possible I said less. I haven't gone back to listen to the videotape. And I realized that the meeting minutes are a reflection of what happened, not what I intended to say. So we can just remove that. And then on page 5, line 36, the word these, T-H-E-S-E, is in there twice. So we want to strike the first one. And then on page 7, line 17, it says 5 in favor. And then it has a parentheses opposed. Minor typo, we'll change that to 0 opposed to reflect the actual vote. And then on page 7, line 33, it says, if this is not the right vehicle, comma, it doesn't. And then there's a blank space. So the thought wasn't completed. So since we don't know what we should
or it should have been a period.
Yeah, it could just say it doesn't, period, or we could just strike it. Yep. And that's it. Any other corrections? Other than that, you did a fantastic job as well. In fact, I really enjoyed reading through that and it kind of refreshed my recollection of what transpired at the last meeting. So, okay. No other additions or corrections. Entertain a motion to approve as corrected.
We have a motion. Move to approve as corrected.
Okay, Commissioner Phillips, is there a second?
Svensson, we'll second that motion.
Okay, great. So we have a motion and second to approve the meeting minutes of July 21st, 2020 as corrected. All those in favor say aye and raise your hand, please.
Aye.
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 All right. Any in opposition? And any abstentions?
Aye.
Okay. Abstain. The abstention.
Aye.
Two. Okay. Commissioner Allen, Commissioner Galloway, and Commissioner Murphy, abstentions. We're absent. Okay. Motion carries. Item E, general public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the public to provide comment on any matter not listed in tonight's meeting agenda. Clerk, do we have any members that have raised their hands? And
we have one. Mr. Palmer's got his hand up.
Okay. And then if you could briefly explain to everybody again how they hit star 9 and then raise their hands if they want to be called on.
Yep. So if you are calling in and you want to speak, if you just hit, like Ms. Chair Lyson said, star 9 on your phone, it'll indicate with a hand raised, and I'll pull you over one at a time to speak. So there, we've got a second coming up. And if you're logged in via computer, you should just be able to click the icon that says raise hand. If you're having trouble with that, there's also the option to send a chat and let us know if for some reason you don't have the icon available. And one of us will take a look real quick and we'll just move you over one at a time so everybody gets a chance to speak.
Great, thank you, Amanda. And we have two hands raised. We will start with Bill Palmer. And a quick reminder, please try to keep your comments to 3 minutes or less unless the commission extends the time limit. So Mr. Palmer, can you hear us?
Should be coming over.
Okay.
There we go. Looks like you're muted, Mr. Palmer. We can see you. You should be able to unmute yourself at this point.
Maybe. Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Thank you.
Okay. My comment is in reference to the stormwater design regulations you dealt with last week or last meeting. There was a note in the findings of fact that there's a consistency with water resource policy. And I have an objection to that, which I'll bring up to the Board of County Commissioners. Water as a resource policy, while it's mentioned in the comprehensive plan, it's not included in the comprehensive plan. So there's no need to be in compliance with something that's not part of the comprehensive plan. Secondarily, if you read through water as a policy implementation plan, that pertains primarily to Kitsap County governments and not the general public. In fact, I only found one provision in there having to do with the general public. And then you, in that, I don't think the public has ever really reviewed that, because there's all kinds of agencies that have reviewed it, but no public or no evidence in any of the discussion material that the public got a shot at it. So I object to that even being considered as part of the design regulations. Again, as far as the commission is concerned, that may be past history, but I'm certainly going to bring it up when it comes to the Board of County Commissioners. And that's the focus of my comments for now.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Do any other members of the public wish to provide comment? And I know we have another hand raised. You're muted,
Amanda. We've got a caller. Set your settings so you should be able to unmute yourself on your phone. And that's the caller with the phone ending in 095.
Caller, we still cannot hear you. If you can try unmute, if it's not showing on your screen, try move the cursor on your mouse down and it should appear on the left-hand side.
Amanda, is it
unless
star
you're
nine
just calling, you hit the star 9 on the phone.
Fortunately, I can't unmute from here on this end for a caller.
Just another moment. Okay, let's go ahead and proceed to the next agenda item, and then if the individual can figure out their IT issue, we'll come back to it right after. So let's go ahead and move to item F, announcements. Are there any announcements by commissioners or staff? See, and Commissioner B.
I have an announcement. One, can I speak now or?
Yes, sir.
Okay. When we were discussing the stormwater design manual approval, we were told in the discussion that there were no means for us to comment and reduce the requirements that were being presented. There were two items that were presented. One was that there was an MPDE license of 2007 that required the county to go with the most restrictive case and couldn't reduce it. The second was that the water as a resource policy would not allow us to reduce the number of requirements and the requirements back to what the state required. So that we have in excess of the state requirements in the document. One of the things I found under research was that the 2007.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Point of order. The motion to add this to the agenda failed for lack of a second.
Correct, but I think he's just making an announcement or comment during announcement. So there would be no, we can't take any action on what he says. Correct, yeah. Okay, Mr. Beam, proceed, please.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
The first thing that they quoted was the MPED license or permit of 2007, which in fact said that. Since then, there have been two revisions to that license, and we're no longer bound by that license that does not require that. The second thing that they discussed was that the water as a resource would not allow us to reduce it down to what the state required. So with those two statements, I voted to pass what was presented to us. I find that those statements are not necessarily true. I just want to make sure that everybody understands that we are not bound by a 2007 license that has permit that's been superseded twice. I'm concerned that if you look at the requirements for housing and affordable housing, there was a study done by the county and the city of Bremerton that said that they need 1,480 new units every year. And we're producing housing at the rate of about 500, a third of that. I'm concerned that we're putting more requirements on the system and additional requirements that are inhibiting us meeting our housing requirements. I provided you all in an email the study that was done that says what is the cost of stormwater, and my interpretation of that study said that $70,000 to $100,000 of additional cost is dictated by the stormwater requirements. Well, if you look at what came out last week, the average house being sold in Kitsap County is $428,000. That's well above what most people can afford. And if $100,000 of that is dictated by stormwater, I don't think it's appropriate for us to be making those kind of requirements and to to the houses and that are being developed. We need to have a way of getting our people into houses and at not at a rate that we're doing. So my question is, why are we doing this?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Beam. Are there any other announcements from commissioners or staff?
Is there a desire from the Planning Commission for either Mr. Tucker or myself to respond to conversations during work study as well as the deliberations on the 21st?
Sure.
Yes. Okay.
Please proceed.
Okay. Commissioner Beam, I'll take a stab, and Mr. Tucker, please jump in. Correct me if I'm wrong. So again, Commissioner Beam, thank you for your continued interest in the stormwater update. It's a very important project that definitely will be well beyond Planning Commission review, but also has implication as development projects move forward, whatever the final adoption may be. The questions that you brought up were following the Commission's July 21st deliberations and approval of findings of fact. So please correct me if I'm wrong, but the questions you brought forward were twofold. One relating to the 2007 MPDES permit requirements at that time. As you mentioned, cannot change more restrictive requirements than ecology, as well as water as a resource, specifically as it pertains to our response in a public comment matrix to threshold discharge areas. This was brought forward in a Kitsap Building Association comment, as well as subsequently through the Planning Commission's public hearing process from Mr. Fuhrer, who not on behalf of KBA, but in his own engineering experience. Part of the discussion, including the work studies leading up to deliberation, were discussions of all the various inputs and requirements from the Clean Water Act, the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit requirements, as well as the Western Washington Manual requirements and all the WACs that feed into that. Those are the minimum state requirements we are bound to adhere to. You are correct, and when pointing out with subsequent questions after deliberation, that the permit threshold and year for 2000 did include cannot remove more restrictive requirements than ecology. You are also correct that in subsequent permit updates, that was removed. However, as part of our response to KBA's questions, as well as follow-up, that we did have discussion, as well as noted in the comment matrix, water as a resource extensively. So I prepared something just in case if this was a matter of motion for reconsideration. I'm going to share it just to show what was provided. And
point of order before we go too much further. There was a consideration for an amendment to reconsider this. I don't think we created the announcements to circumvent an amendment to reconsider.
That's correct.
That issue has been decided, and I think if we need a private discussion somewhere else, that's fine. It's not on the agenda. And I think our announcements also need to have a time limit to them.
Well, Commissioner Beam stayed within the 3-minute time limit, so I monitored the time. It is the opportunity for the commissioners to speak about any topic. He was speaking about his position and how he voted. It wasn't until he asked a question, and you may have noticed, I didn't engage the commission and ask to proceed. I merely asked for any other announcements by commissioners or staff. At that time, the staff, the assistant director, requested an opportunity to respond. And since the staff was challenged, I've allowed the staff to respond. Now, if the commission wants to dispense with the issue, I'm certainly willing to dispense with it, and the discussion can be taken offline. But I've gotten the impression from the assistant director that the staff wanted the opportunity to respond to Commissioner Beeves' comments, and she wants to present this document. Now, do you still want to present the document, Commissioner?
Just to add clarification again, this is if the commission warrants their time, I'm happy to discuss. It was brought forward as a comment. I'm happy to address, but if this is not something the commission wants to here or move on to the actual agenda item, the use table, I'm okay with that as well.
Yeah, and my feeling is we've heard from two commissioners now, and I'm watching the body language from the other commissioners, and I'm sensing at least a majority wants to move forward. Is that okay with the commission?
Second.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay.
Yes.
So we will now proceed. Thank you, everybody. Next item, we want to move back to public comment again to give the individual an opportunity whose hand is raised. So Clerk Walston, if you could try and move that person over and we'll give it one more shot. Okay, caller, if you could please unmute your phone and provide comment and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less.
And the unmute is done by star 9, correct?
Star 9 is to raise your hand. I think it might depend. Let's see.
I can try and sort of troubleshoot behind the scenes a little bit, but I don't know if you want to pause, take a quick couple minutes, if you want to move on.
Okay, while you're doing that, I have one announcement. I sent an email to the chairperson of the Board of County Commissioners, Commissioner Garrido, noting that the planning in anticipation of our joint meeting with the Board of County Commissioners, that we had discussed it. We don't have a preference regarding date, time, setting, although we know it's likely to be a virtual meeting, and that to please, you know, that we know they have a challenging meeting schedule, especially with budget meetings, but you know, we'll get fit in between now and the end of the year. And I see that I got an email response from Commissioner Garrido. I have not looked at it yet, but we'll get the meeting scheduled, and I'm sure the commissioner staff will work with the DCD staff, and we'll put some dates together and hopefully circulate those and see if we get as many members as possible to the joint meeting this year. Okay. Any other success, Amanda? Doesn't look like it, and it looks like we're going to have to proceed.
Yeah.
This individual's welcome, hopefully, to come back to the next meeting. If it's especially a topic with a future public hearing, and can provide written comment to us as well. Okay. Item G, work study 2019-2020 zoning use table update. Liz Williams, welcome.
Thank you, commissioners. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen and start the presentation for the work study. Are you all seeing the presentation?
Not yet.
No, I'm seeing you.
Oh, I can't see you. That's kind of
interesting. No complaints.
Let me see. Well, now I just lost all my screens. There we go. And now I just need to do... Sorry, I'm working on multiple screens at the moment. This is not... Let me... I lost my commands, Amanda. Sorry.
Your commands, like to start your presentation, or yeah, everything on the bottom?
Yeah, everything on the bottom. So I'm not able to actually see where my presentation or which screen I'm sharing right now. Are you able to undo that for me?
What we're seeing is your title slide in the edit screen in PowerPoint.
Okay, so if I
have an exit
share my screen now, are you seeing this?
Yes.
We see your, yeah, and your notes. Do you have an exit full screen button that you can click, or is it?
There we go.
Now you're in presentation mode.
Full screen.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. I am not sure what happened there, but we'll make it work.
Amanda helped me share my screen for the first time ever in Zoom, and as a result, you got slided.
Okay, sounds good. Well, note to self, next time I'll have Amanda share the presentation. All right, so let me know if you lose the PowerPoint presentation on the screen, but I'm just going to go ahead and walk through this tonight. So for the record, Liz Williams with the Department of Community Development. So we're here tonight as the department to facilitate the last of several work study sessions with the Planning Commission since we began this update process last year. So as a reminder, the purpose of this project is to update allowed uses, the level of permit review and development standards to remove barriers to investment in urban growth areas consistent with the county's comprehensive plan. Most recently, we held four work study sessions with the Planning Commission to review preliminary feedback the department received as the proposed changes were developed. We also reviewed resource guides that summarize proposed changes to the allowed use table, definitions, and tonight we're going to walk through the allowed use standards or special provisions resource guide. So to dive right in, during tonight's work study session, we will introduce and review the materials that were sent to you last week. Attachment 1, which is the allowed use or special provisions resource guide, provides a crosswalk between existing code and new development standards to summarize proposed changes. Attachment 2 in your packet is a document that the Planning Commission has reviewed in the past. This is the footnote relocation guide, which is provided as kind of a summary of where footnotes and special provisions that exist in code today will be relocated based on the proposed changes. So as you review the allowed use standards resource guide, you can anticipate the following proposed changes. They will remove existing footnotes where appropriate, relocate existing footnotes and special provisions, and add new development standards for new uses. So before we begin our discussion this evening, I wanted to kind of highlight each one of these proposed changes and give you a few examples of what you might anticipate seeing in the materials if you haven't had a chance to take a look at them already. So the allowed use standards as currently drafted would remove 32 footnotes that are currently in code today and special provisions related to guest houses because this use is proposed to be eliminated. So some examples of footnotes that will be removed, footnote 19, this one references the Silverdale Design District boundaries, but the same provisions can be found elsewhere in our code, so it is redundant and unnecessary, an unnecessary footnote. In addition, footnote 37 requires commercial uses in certain areas to have a residential component, and so the proposal would actually allow small-scale commercial uses without a residential component in certain zones when located at intersections. So this particular footnote would be removed and modified to allow some additional small-scale commercial development. And then last example, footnote 41. This one relates to adult family homes and is being proposed to be removed to comply with state law related to that use, which requires it to be permitted anywhere where commercial and residential uses are allowed. So just kind of as a visual and to orient you to the materials that were provided, if you want to take a look at the best way to determine which footnotes are being removed would be to look at the footnote relocation guide, which is attachment 2. And anywhere where you see the pink shading, those are footnotes that are proposed to be removed. All right, so the next proposed change is to relocate existing footnotes and special provisions to each zone chapter. So these are existing development standards that apply to most uses within a zone, and they will be relocated to the special provisions section of each zone chapter. So again, a few examples of this would be footnote 42, which is the current standard in our code today, that limits outdoor activity in rural industrial zones when abutting or across the street from residential zones. So this footnote would now reside within the rural industrial chapter so that it applies to any use within that particular zone. In addition, footnote 57 requires different levels of permit review when land is undergoing development and is next to a less intensive use. So just to kind of give you a visual of what to anticipate in the materials here on the screen, the zone chapters and the proposed changes are found in attachment 1 of your packet materials. And you'll also note that pages 1 through 11 are where the standards related to specific chapters in our zoning code would reside. So just as you're reviewing, that gives you a little bit of guidance on where to find those zone-specific standards. All right, the next proposed change is to relocate existing footnotes and special provisions to a new chapter, which is chapter 17415. This chapter would contain general requirements applicable to all permit applications, and it would also create sections for each use that's identified in the allowed use table and lay out standards that would be applicable to that use. So again, just to kind of orient you to the materials, you can take a look at attachment 2, which is your footnote relocation guide. That particular document provides some red text within the description of each footnote, which shows you where that standard is relocated within the special use provision, so that either chapter 17415 or the specific zone chapter. So again, just providing you a little bit of guidance as to where things are ending up as you take a look at materials. So here's another visual of the new chapter 17415, so special provisions for allowed uses. It begins with kind of a purpose statement for the chapter and then outlines general requirements for all permit applications and then shifts into the sections for each individual use and lays out standards for that. So that again is all within attachment 1. All right, the final change here would be related to adding new development standards for new uses. So this particular item would be any new standards that have been developed based on the new uses that are proposed as part of this update process. So these standards are typically based on a comparison of surrounding jurisdictions or experience that the department has had with similar uses based on similar like use determinations as part of our permit review process. Where you don't see standards proposed within the current changes, the department anticipates that the public process and public comments will kind of help shape those over time, and or permit review over time can also inform proposed development standards for these new uses. So just to I did want to note that I want to walk through a couple of the new uses. I think it would help to highlight some of the proposed changes as we move forward. I'll try to identify items that the department discussed during the development so that the Planning Commission, you know, may want to consider some of these items as you receive public feedback and consider the proposed changes moving forward. As I mentioned, the department's recommendation is a starting point, and we'll fully anticipate that the public process and feedback will shape the Planning Commission's recommendation to the department. So we encourage public participation and thoughtful discussion as we review the proposed changes moving forward with consideration. So I'd like to quickly switch screens, try to at least, and provide kind of a visual of what you see here on the screen, which is related to event facilities. As you're going through the documents that were provided, I think it's important to kind of look for where you're seeing large blocks of red underlined text. This typically represents where new use provisions would be proposed as part of the update process. So quickly, I'm going to switch screens. I think probably easiest to stop sharing. And escape from that. And okay. So are you seeing the special use provisions on the screen?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Perfect. All right. So the first one I kind of want to walk through with the group before I turn it back to the Planning Commission chair for some questions. It relates to event facilities. So just a few kind of highlights related to this use. It is a new use, but it is similar to existing uses that we have in our table, for example, conference centers and clubs, civic and social. So the department has had some experience with processing applications for this use based on similar like use determinations for those existing uses I just mentioned. So as currently drafted, the special provisions would apply to event facilities in rural zones. It defines what an event participant is. So that is in item A. It also establishes a limit on event participants and lays out criteria for the director or hearing examiner to establish different standards. It also limits the number of events to one per day and one weekend a month must be free of an event. In addition, the standards establish hours of operation and criteria for the director or hearing examiner to vary those particular standards. In addition, there are provisions related to access and parking, and also landscaping requirements. So during the development of proposed standards, the number of event participants and the number of events were consistently discussed as part of the department's kind of review and recommendation development process. So these are areas where you could anticipate potentially receiving public comment or areas where the commission may want to focus on, you know, your review as this moves forward. And, you know, if there are changes to consider, keep in mind that that's what the public process is here to do. And then I'd like to switch gears if there are no quick questions on event facilities. I'll just kind of go through these quickly and then we can.
Oh, Liz?
Yep.
Oh,
sorry. Go ahead.
Actually, I do have a question, Liz.
Yeah.
So this new standard for event facilities would apply to new event facilities that would be contemplated.
Correct, yes. So any so new...
The existing event facilities we have in... Go ahead.
Correct, yes. So the existing event facilities that are currently operating and legally established, you know, would not have to adhere to these particular provisions. So this would be for any new event facility that would be proposed in any rural zone currently.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, real quick on that. How did you arrive at the limitation of 200 persons per outdoor event? And how does that compare with neighboring counties like Pierce or King?
So the 200 events participants is really based on the department's experience with processing similar permit applications or projects moving forwards or in the past. So again, this is just based on our experience right now and the ability to provide flexibility that would support kind of rural economies in the ability to either increase or reduce that event participation by during the public process or during the application review. We tried to lay out some standards that would be used to establish or vary from the kind of baseline of 200 event participants. So if you have, again, other suggestions on how better to lay out this but still providing that flexibility based on, you know, if a large lot were to be proposed as an event facility, perhaps it may warrant additional event participants. That would be determined based on the specific site circumstances in a project as it's proposed.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Liz, this is Dave. I had 2 points here. Number one is we do welcome the Planning Commission's thoughts on how to handle that 200 persons. We did put some language in that does show some considerations for site size, access parking, hours, proximity to neighbors, et cetera. We did want to be able to provide the director or hearing examiner some kind of criteria by which to make that decision, and we would welcome the Planning Commission's thoughts on that. The other thing that I wanted to just clarify, where previously we have stated that we are not doing any changes in the rural residential zones, and yet here the first three words are in rural zones. So I want to clarify the why on that, and that's because this is a new use, and because it's a new use, we don't have any special provisions for it. So therefore, because we're adding a new use, we need to do something. We can't just leave it hanging out there. Is that correct, Liz?
That is correct, yes. And I think it also, as you mentioned, having the standards does help in the kind of review of permit applications as they move forward and provides kind of a basis for conditions that may be recommended to mitigate any potential impacts. In addition, as Dave mentioned, this use is one that is new, but as I stated, it is one that we do have some experience with as a department in processing under that similar like use determination process. All right.
Liz, could you scroll down to the obscuring the event on the...
For landscaping requirements?
For landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
And around the perimeter of the entire parcel or proposed area of accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
So if the applicant can show that their event can be screened by a smaller perimeter than the whole lot,
mm-hmm.
that would be allowed, correct?
So based on kind of the language in item number four, shall be installed and maintained in conformance with the requirements of 17.50, 500. That is our landscaping requirements and the buffering requirements, which does build in a little bit of flexibility based on the site specific circumstances for varying that buffer requirement. But if you do see other changes in the language that would help to clarify that, that is definitely something that, you know, we'd welcome your feedback on as this moves forward through the process.
Like if the applicant can show that all the surrounding landowners don't mind seeing the event or whatever, then they, you know, I would hope that we could require screening go up and everything for a simple event.
I think the only I hear what you're saying in terms of providing that flexibility based on circumstances. Certainly, I think the caution and the thing to think about related to neighbor consent is neighbors do change over time. And so making sure that any mitigation measures that may be required as part of a proposal, I think that's the intent here. But it's something I'll take note of and look for if there are public comments related to that that can help support clarification around that flexibility that you're noting.
And I would add that this is not necessarily just providing a visual buffer for the event itself, but also for all the parking for you know, this could be headlights at night, late in the evening, you know, it could be buffering a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I'm sure in her role as hearing examiner, one of our commissioners on the call today can probably has a lot of experience hearing all these issues.
Well,
yeah, and actually, I did want to ask about one of them with respect to the compliance with the county's noise ordinance. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a specific reference in here to the requirement for compliance, so that no one thinks that they can have, you know, amplified music, that they can exceed those levels.
Yeah, so to that point specifically, in the general provisions section of the new chapter that's being created, all permit applications would have to comply with the noise ordinance I believe it's Title 10 Kitsap yep. County Code. So that should, you know, lay those standards out for every application in addition to event facilities. Any other questions on event facilities at this point? Okay. Just going to quickly move over to campgrounds, which was another new use that I want to touch on. So campgrounds, this is essentially the new use would allow for short-term stays at a recreational facility. The current proposal would limit any stay to no more than 30 days within a 40-day period. Like the number of events and participants with the event facility piece that we just reviewed. This is an area that the Planning Commission may anticipate receiving some public comment on. And again, the department would welcome kind of feedback from those that are interested related to this particular one, kind of keeping in mind that the intention of a campground is for those short-term stays. So the 30 days within a 40-day time period is a modification of existing language that is found in the WAC related to campgrounds and campground facilities. And so it's modifying some rather complex language that lays out different calendar, you know, ranges in the year and limits days based on that. So this proposal that you see currently before you does modify that language in the WAC, but it also does provide kind of a basis for short-term stays. Scrolling down here quickly, and again, just reiterating that those campgrounds are not intended for permanent residency, just for that kind of temporary short-term stay.
So earlier today, I researched King County as an example, and they allow 6 months, which mm-hmm. is a big difference from 30 days and then having to leave, or during that 30 day, and then having to leave 10 days and then return. So mm-hmm. I'll probably do more research on neighboring counties, what works, what doesn't. Do you happen to know what the limitation is in the state parks? For example, Kitsap Memorial Park, which is in a rural area out by Lowfall. I searched their website today and I couldn't find the maximum number of days.
I'd be happy to send out an email to the commission with the exact WAC section to have you take a look at kind of how the state regulates some of their campground facilities, but related to specific areas within Kitsap. I'm not sure I have an answer beyond that at this point, but I can give you what is in code at the state level to give you an understanding of how they regulate stays there.
Okay, and then between now and the next meeting, I'll research the neighboring counties. Like I said, I just had time today to search King County, and theirs is 180 days. And so okay. I'll be interested knowing too, we got private campgrounds too. I can think of one on Clear Creek Road as an example.
Yeah.
And I understand trying to achieve a happy medium balance and to meet all the different needs, but mm-hmm. also think about housing shortages, and then although it's not meant to supplement that, but the number of people that travel and want to stay longer than that if they come for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And actually, I do have that WAC reference for you right away. Yeah. If you want to take a look at it, it is 352-32-010. That'll you. Save me an email.
Great.
And we have.
Because I had a question too. Can you get the language back up on the screen?
Here you go.
Yeah, I had a question about this. Thank you. See, my concern is that an allowed stay can be up to 30 days, but the second sentence would appear to make you or to prohibit you if you came and stayed for the weekend, and then you wanted to come back the next weekend, or you stayed 3 days and then you wanted to come back, you'd have to have 10 days separating you, whether you'd stayed the 30 days or whether you stayed 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how this isn't meant to be read? Because I could see that interfering with local folks that don't have, lots of people are camping now, so.
Right, and I think it's just
a problem the way it's worded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was intended initially in the standard at the state level to kind of encourage that more transient nature where, you're not seeing that long-term stay. But I can see where you're saying, the 10 days may become a barrier from just enjoying your weekend time away. So again, I will make note of that as we move forward through the process. And this is an area, if you'd like to recommend some changes that we can look at during deliberations.
We are certainly open to consideration on this, and there are, as you can imagine, all different permutations of it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what we're trying to get at, though, is that somebody's not staying at a campground for 6 months at a stretch, and then they leave for one night, and then they come back the next day, and they're on for their next 6 months, and then it creates a de facto permanent residency, or maybe they're not even moving for that one night and they just have a wink and a nod from the campground operator. We're trying to figure out how to address that the most effectively. So we're certainly open to suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I would also point out that for campsites around the area, if you don't get there and you don't claim it, quickly at the beginning of the season, you're pretty much shut out. Whereas Commissioner Allen's point of you have to wait 10 days to get another reservation, that would almost allow another person to come in and be able to enjoy the site also. So it's kind of a balancing act.
Mm-hmm. That's good perspective.
Could I ask a question about the specific code? Does this apply to designated campgrounds only? Because I think the difference between what I'm seeing here and what like King County applies to their code is that that's 6 months across the board, whether it's private property, camp designated campgrounds, what have you. Can you give a little bit of clarification on the intent? Because if you wanted to, for example, had a lot on your house and you wanted to rent that out to somebody to stay as a affordable way for them to live, is that prohibited in the code? Is that covered somewhere else?
Right. So this particular these standards that we're reviewing right now would be for a designated campground site that would come in and be proposed. And that could be proposed in a rural area or it could be proposed in an urban area based on kind of the recommendations for level of permit review that have been shared on this topic already. So this would be for those short-term stays. In addition to that, and I'm hoping this will answer your question, we also have in our code a proposed use for RV or tiny home parks or mobile home parks, which would be kind of your permanent stay, where someone would come in and they would set up a park and you would then, you know, be able to reside there permanently as kind of an alternative to a traditional subdivision, if you will. So different housing types. And then the third option, kind of what you were saying of a RV or an additional unit on existing residential property or an existing residential lot, that is going to be different. And there are standards in the code related to that. And so that wouldn't be a situation where they would need to comply with this kind of length or duration of stay. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Liz, have we defined the term campground and camping?
Yes, so in the special, so the resource guide that we shared with the commissioners, I think that was, let me just check the date in my presentation, but that was at a recent Planning Commission work study session where we reviewed the proposed definition. So June 16th, you would have received definitions related to this particular use in your packet.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so the last area I just wanted to highlight, and then again, I'm open to any additional questions you have at this time. Just wanted to kind of give you some places to start as you review, is garage sales. So garage sales is one of the new temporary uses that is being proposed in the allowed use table. So it is a new use. It's identified as a use that would be temporary in nature. And there are some standards that have been proposed related to garage sales that would kind of lay out some conditions that would need to be followed. And just to be clear, this particular use would not require any permit. It's just the use would have to comply with these particular standards. So these are based on the City of Port Orchard's existing standards related to garage sales. And kind of some highlights to call attention to, as currently drafted, the number of events would be limited to four per year. I'm sure I sound like a broken record on this one at this point, but again, we anticipate this will receive some public comment during the process. Limits the hours of operations and also establishes the requirement that goods cannot be placed in the public right away. And then just establishes kind of general standards for what to anticipate related to a garage sale. So again, open to suggestions. I anticipate the number of events per year may be a topic of discussion or public comment that we received during the process, but happy to answer any questions you have on the structure related to this particular allowed use.
Liz, they on the item E, responsibility of the resident operator sale to ensure traffic is not obscured.
Obstructed.
How do we anticipate that happening?
Well, I think that, you know, the onus is definitely being put on the resident or the person that's holding the sale. Typically, any issues we have with compliance are dealt with through code compliance. So, you know, it would be the responsibility of, you know, neighbors to identify issues. And then the county would go out and investigate based on those complaints that are received.
But on a traffic issue, that's a immediate issue, and that is not a planning preview.
Sure.
That's traffic police.
Yeah. So perhaps, you know, instead of the standard as drafted, you know, some modification could be proposed that would require some sort of parking on available outside of the right of way to ensure that traffic, you know, congestion would not occur. So, you know, that is definitely something that could be proposed to help clarify that particular point.
Okay. Well, we do that with signage, though. We have land use planning restrictions on the type of signage because you might interfere with traffic and visibility and those types of things. So it still kind of fits within. I was surprised. I looked at neighboring counties and some of them have a limit of two, which surprised me because I was concerned about limiting four. We'll wait and see what the testimony is, but I was thinking more in the range of six. So it's going to be interesting to see the testimony we get. And again, comparing the neighboring jurisdictions.
Hopefully it's not 52.
Yeah.
One every weekend.
So just a quick question. I know of places that they have automobile, motorcycle, boat, whatever, for sale. You know, on a weekly basis. So do they fall under the garage sale?
I don't think that they do.
Where do they fall?
Perhaps maybe under accessory use of a property. But I could definitely go back to our current land use reviewers or Dave. If you have thoughts on where that might land, happy to let you chime in there. But that's kind of how I would view that right now.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know that we regulate that specifically, and you know I would agree that would be an accessory use to the primary. The reason why, just to remind everybody in case you missed it or missed a meeting, the reason that we even added garage sales here is because we do have some situations where there have been de facto 365 days a week garage sales going on in some locations, and this was an attempt to at least provide a basis for some enforcement.
Well, and I would point out that some of these locations that I'm thinking of, it's constant. They're in business.
Yeah. So on one hand, you know, the extreme is you have a de facto permanent garage sale, which is really a retail commercial operation. On the other end of the spectrum, you could either fully prohibit them, which I don't think anybody would really want, or you could go the route of, I believe it was Mill Creek that has them all throughout the city on one day, all at the same time, and then it's garage sale day, and then you have, my experience with that one was it's hard to drive anywhere in Mill Creek on that day.
True.
Having lived in Mill Creek and experienced that for 10 years myself, I actually liked that because it was actually two weekends a year, one in the fall and one in the spring. And you were able as a community to prep for it. And Mill Creek's a lot different than the community here. We're more spread out. That's hard for us to do here. But I actually liked that better because then I had two weekends. I could either vacate my premises or, you know, sell stuff. So
That's the merit of planning locally. We can address those different kinds of situations differently.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like living next to the county fair if you're near the fairgrounds and want to get out of town at the time.
Yeah. So that was kind of, I just wanted to take the opportunity to run through a few as this is being introduced to the Planning Commission for the first time this evening. I'm happy to answer any other questions or we can continue to talk about kind of next steps and what to anticipate moving forward. So I'll turn it back to the chair and let you take it from here.
Okay. I've got a few myself, but let's go ahead and open it up to everybody. And I can't see everybody, so if we could remove shared screen at least temporarily.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Yeah. Thanks. Sorry to have to.
That's okay.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Quick comment or question. All of the code is going to be searchable online, correct?
So once the board, once this process wraps up and the board approves the final changes, it'll be integrated into our online code, which is serviced through Code Publishing. Part of this particular update process is also to explore using some new capability or some capabilities that Code Publishing has to kind of hyperlink within sections of code. So that is one element that we're exploring as part of implementation. And to specifically answer your question, the online version, yes, you can search for words, key phrases, and then as in addition, we are looking at some hyperlinking as well to provide some customer service.
And elements. I would greatly appreciate a demonstration of some of this.
That, okay.
You know, if there's new capabilities, kind of show of how that's going to work so that we understand how, you know, footnotes can be rolled in and noticed and not, you know, you don't have to do a lot of digging to mm-hmm. find what you're looking for mm-hmm. and you get the whole picture.
Right. Okay. So okay. Perhaps if it would be helpful, during maybe the next session, we could just do a quick demo of, you know, here's how you would land at the allowed use table and kind of here's the different navigation paths that you could take as part of the new structure that's being developed okay. as part of this proposal. Would that be helpful, do you think?
I think so.
Yeah, and this will also be, you know, the next meeting will be when you have everything, you know, together as one package, and that should help to, you know, clarify as well how the different pieces interact that we've been going through individually over the last few months.
Any other questions or comments?
Just once I'm here, I have a question. What time frame are we looking at moving forward with this process? Forgive me if this is been addressed previously, but I'm just curious.
A great question. So right now we are in the midst of, you know, considering scheduling the public hearing. So we're considering September 15th, which I believe is the next regular meeting scheduled for the Planning Commission for a public hearing related to this topic. That will all kind of the public process will culminate with the release of the department's recommendation, SEPA, and the draft ordinance, in addition to the resource guides that we've been going through over the last few months to kind of aid in how the ordinance version is not as customer friendly in terms of what is actually changing from current code to the proposed recommendation of the department. So the resource guides are there as a tool to kind of show that crosswalk between what is current in code and what is being proposed. So we'll bundle all of that together. And with the release of that, we'll start the public comment period related to this process. And then, as I mentioned, we're currently looking at September 15th for scheduling that public hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I've got a few. So first, the document itself, everything in black print is existing code, or are some of those changes that have been written in over the past year as we started this process, and the red line is just the latest changes?
So it does try to pick up any changes from existing code. There may be some areas where we've clarified existing provisions from a kind of user-friendly standpoint that might not show up in strikeout underline. So one example comes to mind off the top of my head, and it relates to uses that are not allowed in the Wagga Way design district in Silverdale. And that standard in particular adds some language where it says located within appendix C1 of Title 17. So again, just as a kind of clarification to help orient folks, but predominantly, yes, any changes from existing code would show up in underlined redlined version in the documents.
Great. Okay. So prior to the hearing, because I want to put the two side by side and check. So for example, on page 12, there's sections in there about indoor pets, household pets. And of course, there's limitations. I think it said the limitation indoor is 5. It exempts feline. But I didn't know whether that was existing code, and I haven't gone back to look at that.
Right, yeah. And in that particular instance, yes, it is a special provision that's located in 17410060 currently. And that was one that was a little bit strange because it's not exactly a land use category, but it does apply to several land use categories. So that's why it landed within the general provisions section, because it may apply to all permit applications depending on what's being requested.
Okay. And we pretty much covered everything I had on campgrounds, although I wanted to mention, and I need to reconcile through my mind, the differences between a hotel, motel, and a campground, because you're providing the same function. You're staying the night over there. You're getting some level of basic services, but we don't put a limitation on hotels and motels saying, well, you can stay there 30 days at the Oxford Inn, but come day 31, you're out, and you got to be out 10 days and then you can come back. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to, you know, put these together again, recognizing that they're different sites, different approval processes, et cetera. But still, as a consumer, it's very similar. If you're traveling during the summer and you have an RV rather than staying at the local hotel, you go stay at a private park. Mm-hmm. So why are we putting that type of restriction? And I definitely understand what Dave talked about earlier, and not have an open floodgate where you can stay almost a year, leave a day and come back. So I think there needs to be some type of regulation. Mm-hmm. But again, it's nice that you've given us that flexibility to have that discussion of, okay, what should it be? Should it be 30 days? And if not, what? So that's helpful. We covered the event facilities, and I like having the director may adjust it, and that you said it's based on your past experiences with applications for these types of things. And I am interested a little bit in that, not that we've had any big events, but I think like church revivals and different things where you might have to have that. And I'm glad Commissioner Phillips addressed the landscaping too, and wondering, you know, if you're in an area that has a forest nearby, you don't have to worry about some of that kind of stuff. But if you're in a big open field, how do you temporarily install that if it's a temporary facility? So, but we can talk more about that later. I wanted to know page 29, fitness center. Is it in existing code? I see that there's a limitation of 5,000 square feet on fitness centers. Is that currently in code?
Yes. So fitness centers is an existing use. Footnote 90, or the reference in the provisions, indicates that that is footnote 100 for that particular provision. And I think it might just be reformatted slightly in the fact that the footnote reads, you know, fitness centers shall not exceed 5,000 square feet in size, but this kind of reformats that standard to identify which zones in particular would be subject to that requirement. So the existing footnote that is being referenced here is footnote 100, if you want to take a look at how it's currently drafted in code today.
Great, thank you.
And that's a good note of clarification for everyone as you review attachment one. You'll note that there are little footnote references throughout the document, which then relate to down in the footer of the document. It provides what footnote that is essentially relocating to this area of code. So it's there for your reference to know where that standard came from in our existing code.
Yeah, that's helpful. I noted too, King County's limitation is 10,000 square feet for fitness centers, but again, different dynamics and number of clientele and that type of stuff. So, okay. And then I think we pretty much answered everything on garage sales, or we'll come back to it. And then although it's not in our discussion tonight, it's still similar to the topic on a hot button topic, accessory dwelling units. It's come up as a subject. I'm wondering if the staff, I know we had a matrix of the different code changes, and it included, you know, City of Paulsboro, Port Orchard, et cetera. But do we have any matrices research with neighboring counties? One thing I noted with King County, if I'm accurate, they have a new document they put out in March of this year, noting that in King County, accessory dwelling units are not even, ours are conditional use permit, and we're talking about it, administrative conditional use, but in King County, they're outright permitted. You just fill out the paperwork and you're good, according to all the records I saw. That's something I still need to confirm, talk with staff over there, et cetera. But I am interested in knowing what adjoining jurisdictions do. I noted in Pierce County, they don't include ADU totals in their population allocations, as an example. And I know that's a hot topic with, especially with the tribes, about allocation and density and in rural areas, but something I'm interested in. I don't want to give the staff any extra work. I can do the research myself, but I don't want to duplicate if the staff has already got some type of documentation on ADUs in neighboring counties, for example, in King.
So the only comparison that we would have at this point related to, you know, where uses are allowed is really just the comparison of how jurisdictions are categorizing their uses. We've not done a level of analysis to take a look at where, you know, certain jurisdictions are permitting certain uses. Mainly because of the fact that certain zoning designations don't always align across jurisdictions. So it's really the recommendation before you currently is based on a review of our current zone intent purpose statements and trying to align levels of permit review with how those are currently drafted in our code. So I don't have a comparison that I can provide with you at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Another point of information too, if you are researching, Mr. Eliason, is also kind of the urban rural split issues in neighboring counties. If we just pull King, Pierce, Snohomish, and kind of the GMA primary concerns we have with going to a CUP to an administrative conditional use permit. Again, that growth that you mentioned that the tribes have concerns with in the rural areas. If you look at King, Pierce, and Snohomish County, they don't have that urban rural split dynamic as well as legacy lot issues in the rural areas compared to Kitsap County. We are a unique bird in that regards. So just flag that as kind of an informational component.
Great, thanks.
Any other questions? One other factor that you might consider in your research is over the past few years, there have been numerous proposals introduced in the legislature that would affect the way ADUs are managed, especially in urban growth areas. And so this has been a repeated topic in the legislature. Some of them make a lot of sense. Some of them only make sense within the NF5 corridor. And some of them could really change the way we approach ADUs across the county.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I know there's been a lot of changes over the last 5 or 6 years, but almost every jurisdiction has eased their restrictions. There's very few that have become more restrictive. Bainbridge Island's a good example because of the housing affordability crisis and the large percentage of their city employees that can't afford to live on Bainbridge Island. So as part of their housing affordability task force process, they specifically identified ADUs as a potential solution, and they've made changes at the city of Bainbridge Island. Although, again, it's an incorporated area, although most of it's rural and 90% cover, tree cover. But it's nice to have that kind of information as we move forward. And again, this was a topic we haven't decided, you know, if we're going to address that in this process or put it in that parking lot, and then at some point in the future try to address it.
Yes, and with respect to the shifting permissibility, there's also within the legislature been increased focus on high capacity transit areas and how ADUs and other housing is managed within walking distance of those high capacity transit areas.
Right. Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing and hearing none, we'll move on. Thank you, Liz.
Appreciate
you being here tonight. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have to drop right now to go to another call, but just wanted to give you a heads up. Thank you. And the discussion has been very good tonight. Kudos to the staff.
Great, and thanks.
We'll see you next time.
Great to see you.
Thank you.
Okay.
You too.
Move to item F for the good of the order. Does anybody have anything, commissioners, staff? Commissioner Beam.
Can I make an observation on previous topic? One of the things that happened when I first came on board the board was a discussion with the Kitsap public market. And they were discussing whether they could have a market in with its current things. And I don't want to go into that. But one of the things that proposed is that little neighborhood markets could only be in on arterials or arterial connections or the intersection between the two. That seems to me to be very limiting. In particular, I looked about the neighborhood in East Bremerton, which I live, and there's only two arterials in East Bremerton, and one of them is Wagga Way and one of them is Perry. And that pretty much eliminates the possibility of having neighborhood grocery stores anywhere else in East Bremerton. And I was just wondering, what was the requirement that limited the neighborhood grocery stores to just arterials and arterial connectors? Do I have an answer for that?
Angie or Liz, please.
Liz, can you discuss the current draft consideration? Like, we
right.
discussed this at a couple of work studies ago. I don't recall which time we did.
Right. So this particular item is related to a couple of footnotes that we have in our code currently. The first is that in a lot of our residential zones, any commercial use currently requires some sort of commercial component. So in essence, that becomes a barrier to allowing the small scale grocery shop as mentioned. In addition to that, we have a current footnote that limits commercial uses to intersections, but no real specification at this point related to what type of intersection. So that could mean any corner within any neighborhood. Yeah. So the particular proposal that is before the commission would modify those two footnotes and would limit, as Commissioner Beam is mentioning, the commercial uses to those intersections, which are arterial to arterial, or I think it's the more intensive classification as well. So that, yeah, the collectors. Thank you, Dave. So that does show up within the current recommendation. So if that is something that the commission would like to discuss as this moves forward, again, this is part of the kind of public consideration phase. It was an attempt, the revisions are an attempt to balance kind of neighborhood compatibility with also allowing kind of the desire to see some smaller scale commercial uses and not limiting limiting it to only when there is a kind of mixed use development being proposed. So again, open to suggestions as this moves forward.
Yeah, to add to that, I think the operative word that Liz used there was balance. And I think from the department's perspective, there was a recognition that that we are talking about residential zones here. We're not talking about commercial zones. We're talking about residential zones. Mm-hmm. And so we want to try to find a way where we can still maintain residential character, yet still provide the opportunity for walkability and small stores and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. So basically there needs to be some sort of flexibility built into this, as in the director can vary the requirements.
We would prefer to see some kind of criteria by which we could base the decision. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. But yep. At the same time, we want to give a flexibility of, okay, this is an exception to that the situation. Norm. So the, you know, we shouldn't have to, you know, do a backflip to get to saying, yes, this fits the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Any other for good of the order? Okay, seeing and hearing none, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Oh, I move we adjourn.
Okay, we have a motion from Commissioner Phillips. Second. Commissioner Bean? Okay, all those in favor of the motion, say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Meeting adjourned at 7 o'clock p.m. We'll see everyone at the next meeting.
Thank you, everybody.
Yep, thanks again. Good night. Appreciate everybody being here tonight.